Welcome to the Well Seen Podcast. My name is Gabrielle Doria and I am your host. This is the third episode. So exciting. Today on the podcast, we have Jim Monroe. And Jim is a New Zealand born and raised entrepreneur, a high performance life and business alchemist. She's a mentor, a model, a speaker. She also has an athleisure wear business where she sells quality clothing to women, boutiques, and studios. And also she leads a team of women to do the same. Today on the episode, we are talking about overcoming anxiety. And I know that's something that I've dealt with all my life. And Jim shares her experience going through fitness competitions and where her anxiety and panic attacks started coming from. We cover the tools that we've learned throughout the years to keep our anxiety at bay. And we talk about therapy and just some other things around anxiety. But it's a good episode. Trigger warning, obviously, anxiety and panic attacks. But it's a great one. I hope you learn a lot from it. And here is episode number 3, Overcoming Anxiety with Jim Monroe. Well, welcome to the podcast. We have Jim Monroe today. How you doing, lady?
Hey, I am good. Thank you.
Okay. So what I want to talk about today is overcoming anxiety. I know that I've experienced anxiety. I don't even know the percentage. What's the percentage now? I would say 100% of people, if I had to make a guess, experience some form of anxiety in their lifetime. But we don't talk about it. You know, we don't talk about it at all. So I want to just jump into where did that start for you and how did it manifest in your body?
Yeah. Where did it start? Really, it started in childhood. And like, I'll be honest, I grew up in a very anxious house. So I had, I would call it closeted anxiety. It didn't show up technically until I went into bodybuilding. And so, I had a very anxious mother and I was kind of just anxious my whole life, but didn't know what it was. And it wasn't debilitating or anything like that. It wasn't really noticeable until 2014, when I went into bodybuilding. Now, when I went into bodybuilding, I did it naturally, which is great. Yes. Kudos, whatever.
What does that mean when you say you went into it naturally? I don't know anything about bodybuilding.
Oh, okay. So steroids, anabolic hormones. Yeah. All of that kind of stuff. I didn't do that. Yeah. Now, had I done that, I may not have had panic attacks and anxiety because I would have been able to drop fat and gain muscle a lot easier if I had done it with synthetics. Right. Mm-hmm. But of course I'm holistic and, when I became holistic, it was really after all of this. However, I've never been a fan of Advil. Don't take them. I don't know. I'm just weird, but
I don't either. So I won't even take an Advil
and did it
either.
Naturally, which, yeah. I'm like, no, if I've got a headache, it's because my body is telling me something. And if I just go and mask that with a pill, then I'm not addressing the problem. So yeah, I get really weird about it. So bodybuilding and obviously to do what you need to do to lose all of that body fat, I was popping caffeine pills. I was taking yohimbe bark, which is natural, but it speeds up your heart rate. And then obviously about 500 milligrams of caffeine pills every day. And then I was taking Bronchaid, which asthmatics take because of the epinephrine in it inside Bronchaid, which is, it dilates your airways, right? And so you can take on a lot more air and oxygen and it speeds up your heart rate again. So I had three things I was forcing my heart rate to just go in overdrive. And then of course you got to think about your adrenals with all of that caffeine. And I was doing intense, like high intensity interval training, 20 minutes every morning on the Stairmaster. I would sprint up the Stairmaster on the highest level for 20 minutes. And then I would go back in the afternoon and lift very heavy weights twice a day, 7 days a week. And if you know anything about high intensity interval training, you should not be doing true high intensity interval training any more than four times a week, because true high intensity interval training done right, is very, very taxing. So anyway, I was doing that 7 days and lifting weights and taking all of the other stuff. So I say naturally, however, meh, you know, is this stuff really? It's just what I mean is that there were no steroids and everything.
Sure.
I tried to like stimulate with like natural things, but whatever. So it was just a mess, right? And I was just, it was crazy. I had binge eating disorder because of the restriction. I competed, got second place, whatever. I then, you know, went to go and do it again. And lose even more. So the judges said, and this is why I'm sorry for anyone who's listening, but I really don't like the industry, but they said two things that I needed to work on. One was lose a little bit more body fat under the glutes. Totally fine, I get it, whatever, you know, you needed to see my hamstring tie in, whatever. But the second thing was she should consider getting boobs.
No.
And I was like, wait a minute though, this is bodybuilding, I can't build boobs, and me going and getting boobs is not me building my body. Like, what? So it was like, it was whatever. And I bad taste. It's a terrible industry. But anyway, some people may have, look, a lot of people do it. They have fun. They have great experiences. All power to you. Like, seriously, Nicole Wilkins was my idol. She did it right. She's, you know, all the things. Unfortunately, my journey and my path just was not that. So I was getting ready for another competition in 4 weeks, but in that time frame I had to get rid of the glute fat that I had underneath. So I upped all my dose and intensity of everything and decreased my calories even more. So I was on 900 calories a day, and now, just for the record, I'm eating probably 2500, right? So that puts things into perspective. And I don't count calories. I haven't counted calories in 3.5 years. So I actually don't know how much I eat, but, anyway, it was like 900 calories of fish, cold fish, sweet potato, cause I never had time to actually cook or heat up this fish. Right. So it was all in little baggies, and cold sweet potato and asparagus. And, that was my life. And I went to Las Vegas for the Olympia, and on my way back, just to watch the Olympia and just be in that, you know, and whatever, the industry. On my way home, my ex-husband and I got into an argument when we were eating before we got on flight. And I started to feel obviously heated, but it was like I've never experienced before. Like, it was a heat that I'd never, ever experienced. And I started to feel really nauseous, like I was going to throw up. And I started to feel really panicky, like, so like I was looking for all the exits and looking for where to run. Panic is one of those things, like, I've kind of had frights before, but true panic is terrifying. I mean, like, I actually, my whole digestive system, I had to run to the toilet. Everything was like being excreted from all
areas, all holes,
the whole thing. So because I guess it's your fight or flight. And in order to do that, you have to release your bowels. You have to release everything in your stomach. You have to get rid of everything to be able to run away from that saber-toothed tiger, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You can't be digesting food and you can't be weighed down when you're in true fight or flight mode. And so that's why the body does that. And then I had to get on the plane, and I was like, literally, I thought I was going to pass out. So there's panic attacks show up in different ways for people, like their symptoms. Mine is my body wants to shut down after it's like done its, you know, panic and everything. And then it just wants to pass out. And some people hyperventilate. I don't actually hyperventilate. My brain just wants to go to sleep. Like I don't mean a peaceful sleep, and I've never passed out. It's you're on the verge, which makes, so you're now panicking because you think you're going to pass out. You're now panicking because your stomach is all screwed up. Like, it's just the worst thing. So I got on a plane, and I was just in a panic, total panic on the plane. And I had to keep real inward. And this is another thing with panic attacks and anxiety. It's not like we are running around crazy screaming. No, it's all internal. It's like this massive, massive internal suffering. And you don't want to even tell anybody because you don't want to bring attention to it, because then that
makes it gives you more anxiety.
So I was like, oh my gosh. So I had to be silent, like, just deal with this. And then I got home and I was like, wow, thank goodness that was over. Well, a month later, and I still carried on, caffeine, epinephrine, didn't know what was going on. I was in a restaurant and the same thing happened, started to have the same effect, had to run to the bathroom. And then I had to get out of the restaurant because it was no, for no reason. I wasn't even getting heated at this point with my, like, it just happened. Mm-hmm. And that was like, what? And then it just kept happening over and over. In November, we went to New Orleans for Thanksgiving and I had to fly again. So I had a panic attack on the way over on the flight. And then I stayed in this heightened state of anxiety for the week that we were there because I was so fearful. Because
you knew you were have to be about to be on the plane again.
Exactly.
Oh, I can relate to you.
And so it was just the worst. And then of course, panic attack over on the plane again. So I went to the doctor. I went, okay, fine. I can't continue on like this. Something's wrong. I'm just anxious all the time and I'm having these panic attacks and da da da. So of course, rather than him asking what my lifestyle was like, what I was eating, how I was exercising and all of that, he didn't ask any of that. He just went, oh, here's Paxil. Here's a prescription for Paxil, an antidepressant, anti-anxiety. First off, I did not have a shortage of serotonin. So you do not give somebody who's got plenty of serotonin. Depression was not my thing, right?
Right.
You know, he overdosed me on serotonin, basically. So he gave me this. He said, take this every day. And then here's some Xanax for every time you have to fly. So I was like, okay, you're the doctor. And so went home, took the pill, the Paxil pill, and then woke up the next morning, went to go about my day, had my coffee in my hand, and dropped the coffee cup because I was starting to burn from my toes to my head. My skin was burning. So I felt like my skin was actually on fire. And then I had blurry vision for 2 hours. So I couldn't use my phone to call an ambulance or call my ex-husband who was in Canada traveling at the time. And by the way, obviously I'm not from around here. I'm from New Zealand. So no family. We lived way out. So I had no one to call or anything like that. But I collapsed on the floor and I had to crawl to the couch. And every single side effect that runs across the bottom of the of adverts on TV, every single one of them, every single one actually happened. And once after about 2 hours, when I could see my phone, I called my ex-husband and he was like, you know, he's one of those engineers, right? And he gets on his phone and he's like, do you have this? Do you have this? And I'm like, yes, that's not making me feel any better. Right. And he's like, oh, do you have suicidal thoughts? I was like, no, what? My brain, because of this pill, went straight to the knives in my kitchen. And it said, suicidal thoughts, what? Like knives, what? Like slit your wrists. When my brain came up with that idea, I couldn't get it out of my head. And then I created such an emotional reaction to me even thinking about slitting my wrists that I brought too much energy to that thought that I suffered PTSD for 6 months prior mm-hmm. to that. And I honestly, that was, gosh, what, 6 years ago? If I ever experience panic, or I haven't had a panic attack in 5 years. So this was 6 years ago and I haven't had a panic attack in 5 years. My brain, when I get into severe states of anxiety, because I still have anxiety, I just don't have panic attacks, it still goes, my wrists burn. And it's this, and I have to keep not having an emotional reaction to it because I'm feeding the fear when I have that emotion. So I'm just like, just kind of laugh it off, right? Like,
right.
Don't be scared of it. Don't be scared of it, because then it's going to persist. So, but anyway, so after that, I was by myself. This is, you know, journeying back to when I was in this state, and I packed up my, oh no, that's right. I called my friend and I was like, this is what's happening. She's like, okay, go and pop a Xanax, go and have a Xanax, because that's going to shut down all of what's going on. So I was like, I don't know if I want to take another pill right now. Like I'm freaking out. I think I'm going to die. And she was like, no, go just take a Xanax and that'll calm you down. So I took a Xanax and went to bed 4 hours later. So I finally was able to sleep with the Xanax. 4 hours later, in the middle of the night, I woke up. And you know when people say, oh my gosh, my mind's going a million miles an hour?
Mm-hmm.
That is literally, I did not even understand. I used to say that all the time. But I legitimately, when I woke up, my brain, the thoughts were banging around in my head like a ping pong table and literally a million miles an hour, to the point where I was like, I'm going to call 911 just to knock me out. Look, I need to be knocked out right now. Like, mm-hmm. I'm freaking out. How did I go back to sleep after that? I actually played Norah Jones on my phone, and I was listening to every single word. I had to get something so present and yes. out of my brain, and I had to attach to something that was super present, which was the sound, right? And so I was listening to Norah Jones. And I woke up the next day and I packed my dog up and I packed my stuff up and I got in that car and I drove to Charlotte, North Carolina, because that's where all of my friends were. That's where we lived first. And I had panic attacks in traffic. I had panic attacks with Indian food. Indian food's my favorite food. Oh, I lost 15 pounds in 20 days. 15 pounds. Food made me have panic attacks. It being too hot or being too cold gave me panic. My body was shot. Everything was just like, can't handle anything. Can't handle it. I was this weak, weird looking thing. And it was terrible. And so I actually, I suffered PTSD because of that one pill, that Paxil, that I didn't need. Now, let me state here that some people have chemical imbalances and do need help. And so that as long as they're still doing their meditation and holistic living and everything, and whilst they're on their medicine and doing the work and not just relying on the medicine, yes, I think prescription medicine is definitely necessary in some cases. For my case, it absolutely was not. Absolutely freaking not. He should have asked me what my lifestyle was. What was my lifestyle like? And then he should have said, this is what you need to stop, right? Taking all this stuff, and this is what you need to do. So anyway, it was so bad. I couldn't working out raised my heart rate, which meant I had a panic attack. So I went to yoga, got my, I don't want to swear. I got my butt into yoga, and I had never done yoga before. And I just became, when I went into that yoga studio, and I did it twice. Again, look, I have an addictive personality. Hello, that's why I was in bodybuilding. And it comes from a whole bunch of other stuff, so that we don't need to get into. addictions and behaviors. I went twice a day to yoga. I did power yoga so that I could do yang side of, appease the yang side of me. And then I paired it with yin yoga. And yin was actually harder. Yin was where you're holding positions for 3 to 5 minutes and you're in an uncomfortable state, but you're not in pain. And that brought up so much, because guess what you have to do? You have to sit in silence and discomfort for 3 to 5 minutes. And there is nothing like getting over panic attacks, like forcing yourself in a very safe space with a lot of good energy and a lot of people around you to help you. Sit in that for 3 to 5 minutes. And for 6 months, I did that. And I didn't have a panic attack again.
That's amazing.
After recovery, I went all organic. I became a 200-hour yoga instructor. I taught meditation. I found Gabrielle Bernstein, who now I'm a level 2 alumni of her. That was the beginning of my incredible, incredible journey of natural holistic living.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And it's so interesting how similar your story is to mine. I mean, I like you said, I had anxiety as a child and then in high school, but I didn't understand what that meant. Like I remember taking the SATs and getting it and just being so shaky, and I would rush through all the answers and then have to take a nap in between each session. And then I'd get back up and I'd do it again. Like that was test anxiety. And I had a couple of panic attacks in college, but one in the last 7 years when I got sick, my doctor overdosed me on my thyroid medication, and I'm hypothyroid. Well, I swung to hyper. And so I was just like, I went to the ER twice in 2 days. And with, like you said, I had PTSD from it for 2 years. I didn't drive my car for 6 months because my nervous system was so shot. If I was in the tub and the water was like dripping down from the faucet, I would go like this. I would be startled, like from water in a tub. Like, what are you serious? But people don't understand that when your nervous system gets that shot, it takes work to feel normal again. I mean, it took me a really long time. I mean, I still get anxiety occasionally. I have the tools and I know how to treat it and I know what my body needs. And I'm the type of person that when I panic, I hyperventilate. So my hands like do the crazy, you know, yeah. And they like don't move. So, you know, once I started learning the signs, I would just start sitting on my hands, take really deep breaths, you know? So it's really all about the tools once you've noticed that that is what's happening to you.
Oh gosh. Yeah. And you do. I mean, I went into the whole, I started a blog because I wanted, I've just always been a healer, a teacher, a coach, you know, a visionary entrepreneur, whatever. And so my whole thing is speaking and teaching and coaching, no matter what I'm doing. So even through the midst of my recovery, I started a blog, and this, it's so old, it's like taken down now. But you can actually go to my current blog, cause I rehashed, like I did part one and part two, I think. And I brought it all back and I didn't change any of the wording because I wanted people to understand. I wanted people, cause I'm not there anymore. You know, I'm not where sure. I was. And I wanted people to read it from that place that I was in so that if you're in that place, I would be much more relatable. Right. And so I went into even foods, like what foods to avoid. And of course, my favorite food is freaking Indian food. And I wasn't allowed to have that.
Do you think your anxiety was just like because it was spicy and hot? Is that spicy. Yeah.
Yep, that's it. If I had mild, it would have been fine, but I mm-hmm. like hot food. So anything that was stimulating, I had to get rid of because my adrenals, mm-hmm. they were shot. And so, you know, I went to, so I also studied Ayurvedic medicine. And so I am very pitta vata, mostly pitta. But of course, with like anxiety, that was my vata that was very out of balance. But I'm like 55 pitta, 45% vata, very little kapha. Okay. So of course, what I did was I had to incorporate a lot of kapha stuff. So yogurt, dairy, and I know people are probably freaking out about dairy. Well, dairy is not actually that bad. It's only if you overconsume it or if you legit have a diagnosed lactose intolerance. Mm-hmm. We are actually born to have milk and dairy, but as adults, we don't need it like we used to as mm-hmm. a baby. You think about like baby animals, they nurse off their mums and then they go eat grass. So we're the same. And that's why we become lactose intolerant as well, is because we continue to rely on dairy like we were, right, as a child, and we don't need it as adults. So anyway, dairy's, it's not that bad. It's just like anything, everything in moderation, right?
And the way that the, you know, the American lifestyle consumed, there's dairy in everything. You have cheese on everything. You have butter and everything. I mean, especially down here in the South, there's butter on everything and cheese on everything. So it's when you're getting seven servings a day, I mean, but that's another conversation too.
I know, right? But so I had to have all the comfort stuff. I had to have, but again, I was organic and healthy. So it wasn't, I had to go into like hearty soups. And I was eating grounding foods. So I was eating a lot of root vegetables. Mm-hmm. I was having a lot of Greek yogurt. Greek yogurt is very kapha. It's very dense. It's very calming and soothing in the digestive system. So when I say dairy, that's what I mean, is yogurt. Yogurt is still dairy at the end of the day, unless you have non-dairy yogurt. But mm-hmm. I was eating Greek yogurt. And those root vegetables, the grounding vegetables, the hearty, you know, the warm soups and stuff. And I had to be really, really careful. I couldn't over consume anything because if I ever felt uncomfortable in my stomach, and when I mean uncomfortable, I mean just a slight hint of being too full, I would have a panic attack. So I had to learn how to only eat enough just to be satisfied and just to be okay. Otherwise it would make me, you know, go into a attack. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing that I had to do. I had to change the way that I worked out. Obviously, I was super focused in on yoga, and I couldn't do high intensity interval training. I couldn't do any of that kind of stuff. Slowly got back into weights because that was that's my thing, right? I've lifted weights since I was 16 years old. So slowly got back into that, and just did no jumping. So I kept grounded. Again, grounding. I wore and put a lot of red around my house, because red is the color of our root chakra, right? I did a lot of root chakra meditations. I did a lot of mindfulness. I did this 8-week mindfulness course that I just downloaded on Audible. And that was amazing. Amazing. A couple of things from there that I want to share is practice mindful eating, right? So sit down. And so he had us get a raisin. And he's like, put the raisin in your mouth and then move it around your mouth. Where is it hitting? Is it hitting the roof? Can you feel it on your tongue? Now bite into it. Now feel as you're biting, feel the consistency in between your teeth. And then when your teeth hit each other, what sensation did that feel like? And then the taste, what does it taste? It's sweet. Mindful eating is, again, one of the most present things that we can do, right? And anxiety and panic is because we're thinking about the future. We're thinking about, we're worrying about having another panic attack. We're worrying about something in the future. So if we can practice mindfulness and getting present, then that's another way of eliminating that that anxiety. So mindful eating is one thing, but then also what we call metta meditation, M-E-T-T-A. It's a love and kindness meditation. And you have to, cultivate that feeling of love. And if you find it really difficult, then think about your pet, right? So sometimes we can find it really hard to feel the emotion of love. If we've had a hard upbringing, if we haven't really been taught how to love properly, if we don't love ourselves because of a lack of self-worth, it can be hard to get into that energy of love. So, think about my dogs. Right. Because that is unconditional. I can see your smile. Because
I love my dogs.
Yes. So it's so much easier. See how we're elevated now because we're thinking about our dogs. Mm-hmm. So that's one way to really cultivate the energy and the feeling of love. And so what you do is you send love and kindness and compassion to yourself. You send love and kindness and compassion to somebody that you love. If you feel comfortable doing this one, you can send love and compassion and kindness to somebody you're finding difficult. That is the real work, because that's hard, right? Real work and real growth comes from the hardest things.
Yep.
So when I was thinking about, people that I was in conflict with, or that had, was drama or something, right, that I didn't feel comfortable with, learning to be compassionate towards those people is one of the hardest skills, but the most rewarding skills that I have ever learned, because I learned that When I cultivate that, I can be in traffic and I can send compassion to the person who cut me off. Mm-hmm. It's little things like that. The more that you practice love and compassion, you just automatically become calmer. I used to have really bad road rage. Now, no, because I've just changed my brainwaves. I've changed my mind.
You've changed your thinking. Yeah.
Completely changed. And then you end it with sending love and compassion to all beings, right, in all the world. Once you do that and you go through that meditation, do it guided, right, and you come out of that, boom, you just instantly, because you cannot feel love and fear in the same moment. You feel either love or you feel fear. So what's fear? Anxiety, panic, right? Fear-based. So when you can really hone in and get into that love state, goodbye fear, goodbye anxiety, goodbye panic. It's going to come back. It's going to come back over and over and over again. That's why you need to practice over and over and over again the love and compassion things.
One of my favorite quotes is, anxiety can't live in a grateful heart. That's one of my favorite things. So anytime I'm about to get on a plane, or if I'm in an anxious situation, if I'm grateful, or like you said, I'm thinking about my dogs, or I just make a list of things that I'm grateful for, that happiness doesn't allow the anxiety to step in for me.
Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But yeah, it is. It's, It's all of the, you've got to have those tools. And I mean, I reached for every single one in the world, like I do now. I'm super proactive. I'm a proactive leader. I mean, that's why I'm a leader, right? I'm proactive. I learn. If I don't know something, I go and figure it out. Everything is figure outable. I go and do research. I'm super, super proactive. And I healed on my own, naturally. Well, I mean, yes, I had yoga teachers as I was doing yoga. Yes, I had Audible. So I had a teacher, you know, telling me about mindful eating. So ask for help and get that help. But be proactive about it. Go and search. Go and find ways. Don't just sit there in agony because you're not alone. Ask for help. Like go and figure it out, because people have overcome this stuff. I have. I haven't had a panic attack in 5 years. I'm able to fly now. I flew to New Zealand twice in 1 year. That's 24 hours, you know, of traveling after. So, and it, all of these panic attacks started on airplanes. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't fly for a year and a half after the panic attack incidents. So I couldn't fly for a year and a half. And when I did the work and I healed and I let myself go and I surrendered and I found faith in spirit and universe and whatever your God is. You have that faith, surrender. You don't have to pick yourself up all the time off the kitchen floor, right? Have your faith and allow someone to help you and pick you up. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, one thing that I, in my life is from 6 years old, I've raised my mother. I'll be honest. If we're going to go here, we may as well go here. This is where a lot of it comes from. A lot of me being tough and being a hard ass and going and figuring it all out is because I've been doing it since I was six. And I didn't ask for help because I couldn't. I had no one.
There was no one to give you. I can relate. There was no one to give you that help. And if you didn't figure it out yourself, then it wasn't getting figured out.
Exactly.
Yep.
But we can't even. So I like to do a combination of both. I like to figure things out. And I like to not kind of put my hands up and just be like, well, it's all over. I can't do anything. No, because I am a go-getter. I am mm-hmm. a proactive person. So I will go and figure out and do things on my own. But 50%, I also ask for help. 50% mm-hmm. is who's above me, who I can ask, or who is a mentor, or who's a spiritual teacher that I need to go to, or can I even ask my husband? Oh my God, it was so funny, man. So I've obviously been divorced. So my second husband, when we first got together, I was still in a state of very masculine energy, right? Very, very masculine energy. And so like he would ask to hold my handbag and I'd be like, what are you doing? He'd be like, do you want me to carry your handbag? I'm like, no,
I don't touch my bag.
I'm capable of holding my bag. And like I would hold the doors open for him. It was the weird. And he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm letting you go first, right? It was crazy patterns and behaviors from childhood. And it really did, all the panic attacks completely, but everything happens for a reason. And I actually am so grateful that I had that experience. So grateful, because it completely changed me, changed me for the better. And then I was able to teach people as well. I was able to coach people and teach people who were suffering and who needed help. And I was able to do that and fulfill that destiny and helping people. I help people in many different ways. Obviously now I run an athleisure business and I help people make their own money. I help people have another income. And I still help them all with mindset. I help them with their businesses, even though they may be doing a little bit of my business, but they've all got other businesses. And I get in and I Zoom with them and I help them in their business. And our business, it's just, I'm a helper. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Are you Enneagram? Are you a three?
Yeah.
Figured. I'm a seven, I think. I really need to read the book and take the test again. But last time I did, it was a seven.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny that you. Yeah, I'm a three. I'm a manifesting generator. I'm a Leo. Gosh, I've done all those things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm an advocate. I'm actually one of the rarest personalities. There's only 1% of us in the world. An advocate, an INFG or INFJ. INFJ, I think.
What test is that? There's so many of them now.
So the Myers-Briggs,
that's right.
Yeah. The Myers-Briggs, you can pay to go and like, Yeah, there's some icebreakers to go and pay and like do all that. And then there's a free one called 16 Personalities, and which is based off of Myers-Briggs. And it's the same lettering and everything, but it's the free version. Mm-hmm. And it also tells you like if you're an advocate or a supporter or like whatever you are. Mm-hmm. And then the Strength Finder test. That's also a really good one. Like I'm obsessed with personal development because I do not want to be the reason that I'm limited. I do not want to be the reason that I don't succeed. I don't want to be the reason that I'm unhappy, because when it all comes down to it, no matter what, we are the reason for our unhappiness, for our futures, for our success, for anything, because there are people way less fortunate, way less smart, way less whatever you want, whatever thing that we complain about or think is holding us back. There are people with way less that are doing way more.
And they are thriving. And it's thriving. Like, you know,
we hold ourselves back, and I do not want to be that. I do not want to hold myself back. So I'm like, okay, what can I read? What can I do?
That's so, so, so true. I mean, we're the only ones that can hold ourselves back from following our dreams or achieving whatever it is we want to do. It's just us. That's such a good point.
I mean, I'll blow your mind here. I didn't go to college. I dropped out of high school, 16 years old. Don't even have a high school diploma.
I have a public relations degree. It's communications. I use it. Yeah. And it definitely, like with the world today, like I definitely use it. Yeah. And I'm glad the things I've learned from like media studies and stuff, but you know.
No, and I think it's necessary if you want to be an engineer, a lawyer, a doctor, like all of that kind of stuff. But, and I still also think in the world that we live in, I hope that there's a degree out there. I know that there are like business degrees, but I really hope that they're changing some of the degrees to be like entrepreneurs or, you know, I don't know. I don't want people to listen to this and be offended because they do have degrees. I actually think having a degree probably would have made me even more successful, or maybe not. I have no idea, no idea. All I know is that I'm not going to let it be an excuse.
Absolutely. Do you find it hard to talk to people about your anxiety? Like, I know it's hard to talk to men about it, especially. But I want people to be able to talk about their anxiety, right? I want them to be able to talk about it, you know, to others.
And they're men, and I don't want to be sexist here or anything like that, but I believe in masculine feminine energy, and men are just more, obviously more masculine energy. I've been there too. And I never talked when I was in my masculine, like way too much, cause I didn't feel safe to be in my feminine, because I was placed in the father role when my parents divorced. So I didn't talk about anything. I never asked for help. I didn't talk about any struggles. I didn't cry. I mean, I did not cry from being a teenager. I think the last time I cried was when I was 16, and I didn't cry again until I was 26.
Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, like super, but that's what I'm talking about. I don't even want to say man or woman. I want to say masculine
energy. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when Chris and I got married, he, or even met for that matter, he wasn't super emotional. He's Italian. Like he's strong and tough, and now I just don't feel like what I've learned in my marriage is I can't tell my husband to do something, you know, whether it comes to meditating or doing yoga or going to acupuncture. Like I can't tell him to do that. I have to show him the benefits that it's happened to me. I don't tell, yeah. I just tell him, oh, I feel great from doing this. Once he sees that enough, he's curious. What does my husband do now? Meditation, yoga, acupuncture. His verbiage is very similar to what I say about, you know, just being mindful and things like that, and how I deal with stress. So I've tried to cultivate a relationship with him where it's safe for him to, you know, come to me in stressful situations. I don't think less of him. I actually think it's attractive. I think it's so sexy when a man is 100% vulnerable and, you know, tells you about his stresses. So that's just one thing I've really tried to do in our marriage, because it shouldn't be just me telling him how I'm feeling. Like he deserves to have someone strong to do the same.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that is another part of my healing was my husband now. And because he will be the first one to cry in movies. Mm-hmm. The first one, like I never cried in movies.
You still then, don't cry? You still don't
no,
cry?
I do now.
Okay.
But yeah, I never used to. Never. Oh my gosh. And so when I saw that, he is super masculine and very comfortable when he needs to have that flow of femininity, mm-hmm. and which is the crying or being gentle or touching, or like when he, you know, he's just got that perfect kind of balance. And like, you know, he would cry and I'd be like, what is going on here?
Yeah. Well, because it throws you off.
Yeah. But then because he showed that side, and because he was balanced, it allowed me, and because he was also very masculine, mm-hmm. I didn't need to be masculine anymore. Like, sure, yes. We butt heads in the beginning because I was going, I don't know where my place is. I don't know what my role is. This dynamic is weird. I've never been in this. I don't know what is my worth. What's my value here? Like, yeah. all the things were happening in the first, like, you know, 2 years of our relationship. But he allowed me to step into my feminine because he made it safe for me to do so. Mm-hmm. And then that's when it was like, oh, pinks and purple. Like, I'm sitting here in a bright pink chair. My brand colors are pink and yellow.
You totally embraced it. You totally embraced that femininity. But that's, you know, that it's so important to have that, you know, like, I mean, we've only been married for 5 years almost, and I'm not a pro yet. But I just feel like that's so important just to try to get our men or people that are in that masculine to just, you know, tone it back a little bit, share your emotions. Like, a friend of mine committed suicide a couple months ago, and he was a guy and very strong and masculine. And apparently he had been dealing with struggles for a long time. And I'm still shook about it because I had no idea. I never would have known. So I just want all men to know that it is sexy to talk about your feelings, to talk about, you know, your stressors or whatever, because it's not fair that they don't. It's just not fair.
And it is okay to cry at Marley and Me.
I watched that before I ever had dogs. Do not. Can't. Won't even think about it.
Do not watch Marley and Me.
You want to talk about it? Anxiety. Anytime I take my dog to the vet, that's when I get anxiety. I'm like, what if something happens? Like, that's the kind of anxiety that comes up for me now. Before it was more panicky. You know, when I was on an airplane, it's funny that you said that about airplanes. Back in college, I was on a flight to LA and I was coming home, and our flight had the second engine went out. So the captain comes on and he goes, just wanting to let you guys know that we have to make an emergency landing because we have engine failure. There's a guy next to me and a woman to my left. The woman is crying. The guy asks me if he can hold my hand, and you can feel the flight. You can feel how we're going fast all of a sudden, like super fast, so we can get back, so we can land, because we only have one engine, which I'm pretty sure you can fly off one engine. But at the time, it was very scary. And when we landed, they were trying to put us all back on the same plane, and everybody was riding. They were like, absolutely not. Like, you are giving us a new plane. And I mean, the anxiety that was in that tube still haunts me today. There was a couple next to us. They were like, we're driving home from LA to Atlanta. We're driving. We're not doing it. So anyway, that was the first time the anxiety manifested in my body and I could feel the panic. That's mm-hmm. the first time. So mm-hmm. after that flying, I had a really hard time. When I fly, for those of you who are also bad flyers and get anxiety, I have a whole routine. I bring cozy socks. I bring they give you a blanket, or I have like a cozy sweater. I make sure I'm listening to a movie at takeoff because I'm distracted and I'm listening to it word for word. I've got my peppermint oil that I smell to calm my nerves. Like, I don't play around on planes, because like you'd ruin your whole trip because you're stressed out about getting on the plane when you got to go home.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and another one is, planes, you are leaving the ground. It's one of the most ungrounding things mm-hmm. that you could possibly do. And that's why so many people have that anxiety, because you are leaving Earth. You're actually mm-hmm. leaving. So energetically, you're already off, like you're ungrounded.
Yep.
And so grounding work is so important. If you need to do grounding work before you go on, my favorite thing to imagine or to do is, and I practice grounding almost every day, I'm not going to lie, it's not every day, but I almost every day, I imagine that from my hips, so the widest part of your body, your bone structure and your pelvis, your hips, I imagine that it forms a tree trunk. And from that tree trunk, like it grows and it goes through the buildings, like through the grass, all the way down through rocks and whatever, all the way to the middle of the earth. And then I imagine my big tree trunk, strong as hell tree trunk, grows roots around the center of the earth. And it wraps around, it wraps around, it wraps around, it wraps around, and it grows these roots around the center as if it was like a, you know, a ball in the middle of the earth. And then I actually feel a tug, like I make sure that I'm like, I kind of move, like I'm tugged.
Like you're snugged in.
Yeah, like you're snugged in, you're locked in. And that's how I practice grounding.
I love that.
Yeah.
So when I do grounding, I take my dogs out and I take my socks off and I walk on the ground. I walk on the earth. You know, I feel the earth under me. And just like you said, when I'm on a plane and this is maybe my anxiety speaking, but I don't put my feet on the floor of the plane. I have to have my feet in the seat because I don't like the feeling of the wind underneath my feet. I don't like knowing that there's something under me between the ground and the plane. That's so bizarre, I'm sure, but that's totally how I feel.
We all have those weird, if it makes sense in your own brain and it helps you get through it, then continue to do it.
Yeah.
But the reason that I like the roots from your pelvis rather than your feet, and I walk barefooted, we live in Avalon, we've got a whole bunch of grass up here. And so I walk down, I take my jandals off, my flip-flops, sorry. That's my New Zealand.
What you call them?
My jandals.
Jandals? I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're like sandals, but with a jandal.
The jandals, okay.
But the reason is that I feel like my feet are like twigs. They're not strong enough. And that's why, and also when I'm meditating, I'm sitting on my butt. So I find it hard to do grounding work when my feet aren't actually on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went up to the Kripalu Center to do level 2 with Gabrielle Bernstein, they had an energy worker come in, and she actually taught us about the widest, strongest, most sturdy part of you, which is your pelvis. Imagine that you are growing, right? Whether it be a metal pole, it doesn't matter what it is. I just like earth and groundedness with being a tree trunk, stemming from there, because when you're seated in meditation, you're seated, you're sitting. It's hard. And then, you know what I mean? So that's why I do the, a lot of meditations grounding through feet, and I'm like, but my legs are folded.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that.
So I go through pelvis. Yeah. So well, it would be, maybe if you're sitting in the airplane seat, you could actually imagine that you're from your pelvis, you know, you've got your feet up, which is totally fine. You can still get super grounded by your most sturdy part, and that's your pelvis.
Mm-hmm. And I also I firmly believe that like anxiety and panic attacks, if you can learn the tools and implement them, hopefully you can not have them. Or if the tools aren't working and you get on medication, hopefully that helps you not have the panic attacks. But I do feel like anxiety is kind of like a lifelong thing. It's just however you are learning to manage it and the tools that you're using. And when those intrusive thoughts start to come in, how do you silence them? Because just like you said, when you're in that anxiety panic moment, you don't want to tell somebody, you know, because then it makes you even more anxious. I get phone calls, or if I get a text, it's like, are you okay? Panic, can't handle it.
Yeah.
Anxiety.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Am I okay? Why? Do you know something? Do you know something I don't, you know, like, but I've had to set boundaries. Like with my family, they always do that to me. You okay? Why? Who died? You know? So I've had to tell them, listen, please don't just text me, you okay? So another part of anxiety is creating boundaries. Like if something, if you have something like that, like if something triggers you, learn your triggers and ask for the support around that. Don't text me, are you okay? Say, hey, haven't heard from you in a while. How you doing? Do that. Don't just say, you okay?
Well, so there are two things, two tools here that I want people to learn. And that's one, if you are, when we're talking about panic attacks, just know that the body can't sustain that level of panic for much longer than 30 minutes. Mm. So if you can just understand and know that you're going to be okay and you're going to be safe. And I know, just go through and feel the panic and feel that and just keep saying to yourself, it's only going to last 30 minutes. It will be over. This is not forever. It will be over soon. Like it's hard to do, but that was one thing that really helped me take away the fear of it.
Sure.
Because I was like, it's only going to be 30 minutes of hell. I can do that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now with the anxiety part, what I love to play is a little game called, because my anxiety is always worry. I'm worried about something. So mine is always, what's the worst that can happen? And I always say to myself, like, if it doesn't result in death or prison, I'm okay. So it's like, okay, so I play that game, and it's financial, like everybody's, right?
It's
some form of financial, well, as a business owner. And so if I allow myself to get caught up in a what if scenario, right? So like, well, what if this thing happens or that thing or down the line or 1 year away or blah, 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 blah. And I start to get anxiety because I'm thinking about those thoughts. I go, well, look, what's the worst that can happen, right? Let's say I lose all of my, sources of income. I don't know why, but let's just imagine that all my sources of income have gone. What's the worst that can happen? Well, I can ask for help. So I know that that's okay. But I might lose my, I don't own a house. So I might get kicked out of my apartment. Okay. So that's pretty bad. I might get kicked out of my apartment. I might have to file for bankruptcy. But then bankruptcy is okay, because then I get to start again and it wipes all my debt. And then I'm okay because I'm not dead and I'm not in prison.
Sure.
So then if I lose my house, like, and then I just go down and nothing is ever that bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that instant I'm like, ah, wow, because then when I do that, so I go, it goes down to bankruptcy, right? File for bankruptcy and then I get to start again. Cool. Okay. So maybe if I have to do that, maybe I'll just go back to New Zealand. Oh, that's cool. Maybe I'll go back to New Zealand. Okay, sweet. What can I do in New Zealand? Like, and then I start thinking about
you switch it. Yeah. Do you know? When I get to that place, like, oh, well, what if something happens? I have trained my mind to say, well, what if it doesn't? So I don't even get to the, what if the catastrophic situation happens, spiraling? Well, what if it doesn't? Cool. Yeah. Well, then then let's just see if it does. And so it's kind of like a game. Like, let's just see then. Let's just see if it does. And
because none of them ever happen.
No.
Never happens.
But as a female, I just feel like, or being in the feminine energy, I just feel like we worry about things more than, whether we just worry about a lot of stuff. We're very motherly. We have that instinct. And so we just worry. And one of the tools that I learned pretty early on when I started having panic and anxiety, I put one hand on my stomach, one hand on my heart, deep breaths. And I repeat to myself, I am safe, over and over. Even if I feel a little bit of anxiety coming on, I am safe. My feet are on the ground. I'm feeling myself breathe. I feel my heartbeat. I'm safe. I'm golden. Let's get rid of these intrusive thoughts. What if this doesn't happen? Let's conquer the day.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, and that's, you're so right. And you made me think, actually, because sometimes it won't help people if they go down that catastrophic path.
That'll give some people more anxiety, like me. Like when you were doing it, I was like, I can't do that.
Bankruptcy sounds like the worst thing ever. Right. Yeah. Because it could be really bad. But, but then again, it took me many years, remember, though, I've been practicing the law of attraction for 18 years. That's when I was first introduced to the law of attraction. So I've spent many, many years seeing the positive and retraining my brain. So bankruptcy to me is actually not that bad. I really don't care. Like I really couldn't give a crap if I went bankrupt. And that could be one of the worst things. If you're going down a worried state of financial kind of thing, I have enough friends and enough family. Like I'm going to be fine.
Sure.
And that's where that whole I'm safe, I'm protected. Because by the end of it, like I get to that whole, oh yeah. Cause then I realize that I can ask for help. I can
move in with
this person or my husband. First off, I'm married. It's never going to happen. So like it's okay. Right. He's got my back. So why even worry about it? Like why worry about bankruptcy? It's just not going to happen. But it is that makes me feel safe. But you're right. It actually could really trigger people to go down that path if you're not geared up for that.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I'm also one of those people that like I said, everything is figure outable. And if I have, you know, my dogs and a backpack, I'm okay. I'll figure it out. It's fine. As long death and prison freak me out.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't result in that, like, I'm really, truly okay.
Yeah. No, and that's so smart. But it, just like you said, it's all about training your mind to know that, right? Like, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole because then I'll worry about all the other things. For me, I cut that off immediately. Like, but what if it doesn't? My sister was in the car with me a couple weeks ago and my niece. And she's like, well, what if the people at camp don't like me? Or what if, you know, I was taking her to camp. She's like, but what if, you know, they laugh at me or what? And I'm like, but what if they don't?
Yeah.
Like, let's cut it. Let's cut it. You're seven. Let's go ahead and teach you how to cut that off. Like, let's not worry about all those things. And when those things do happen, let's, you know, deal with it then. But what if your experience that you're worrying about is actually amazing, but you just wasted so much time and made yourself so exhausted by worrying that you don't even get to enjoy the situation, you know?
Yeah. And that's putting you that I love that actually, because that 7-year-old, if you say to her, okay, but what if you go and you meet your best friend? And what if you go and someone compliments you on your dress? How would you feel? And then she'd be like, well, I feel really good and da-da-da. Yeah. And boom, you've just changed her state.
Yeah. And she went to camp for 5 days and that was our conversation every morning. Well, first of all, we had a dance party in the car because she was nervous and I like to listen to music if I'm feeling nervous. And so we had a dance party to kind of, you know, get the nerves out. And then that's how I started. You know, I hung out with my family a lot over the summer with the kids and, you know, I took two of my nieces to camp, my sister to camp. And so I was around a lot of kids this summer and three different children said the words depression to me, that they were depressed and they were under the age of 16, three of them. And I'm like, and quite frankly, I don't think they understand what that word means, but one of them, you know, had a friend that passed away earlier this year. And that was her first like big traumatic friendship, you know, or death experience. Right. And she was suffering and she was suffering in silence. And she told me that a friend of hers at school went to a therapist and it really helped her. So she asked if she could go to a therapist too. And I was like, yes, go to a therapist, like 100%. So our young people are experiencing, and now that we're talking about anxiety and depression and panics more, the children are starting to listen to those words and like self-diagnose themselves, you know, and they're like, well, maybe I should be on medication. And it's like, hold on a second. Let's talk through what you're going through. What's going on? How do you feel? You know, one of the kids, not my family or anything, but a kid that I was around this summer was, you know, thinking about suicide. I'm like, you're 15. Like, how can we, you know, we just have to do a better job of
social media.
Yeah. Well,
and their media has actually gotten so bad for that.
Yeah. And they're also experiencing all these traumatic situations as kids and they don't know how to deal with it. And it's our job to, you know, help them and be that support system. I am all for therapy. I have been seeing a therapist since I was 18 years old. I'm all for just having an outside source listen to me and talk me through my thoughts. I'm so for it. And I just hope our young people know how, you know, it's cool to go to therapy. Like that's cool. Like that's not weak. And you know, if you're struggling, there's help and you can talk it out.
Yeah. Well, because the one thing with therapy is because we need to talk as well. And I mean, a lot of men or males or masculine energy need to practice even opening their mouths and talking. Mm-hmm. But for the females who we talk to our friends a lot, you've got to remember that our friends can be like super supportive, but they've also got their own limiting beliefs and behaviors that hold them back. And they've got their, you know, their systems that they, you know, think about, or they've got their little self-worth issues or whatever. So when you're talking to a girlfriend, even you've got to be really careful because their advice, without having studied, you know, psychology or therapy or done any of this kind of work, right? They're going to give you advice from an unhealed state and hurt people
Yes.
So if that's why therapy is so, we can have girlfriends that we talk to and all that stuff. We do need to be very wary that they are coming from a possible unhealed state. And that's why therapy is really important. You know, we have a couples therapist who's, I don't know, man. Like he's a new guy. We're testing him out. His like expressions and his facial expressions and stuff, like as a therapist, you can't react when you have, when someone's talking, like, especially in a couple's situation,
you can't pick sides. You cannot pick sides.
No. And you can't react. Your face and your body language tells a 1,000 words, right? So you've got to be really mindful of that as a therapist. Like, you can't react to either one of them talking, and he's not good at that. You've got to find someone who, yeah, you really do. It is important to get the right one.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, it's so important. You can't offload it to, you can't offload your stuff. You've got to give it to a therapist. Mm-hmm. Depending on how, and this is, again, trauma is, we're talking about different levels of trauma, right? So I don't talk, someone who has, for instance, maybe sexual abuse trauma, I will not life coach them. I am not a therapist. I am not, that is a different level of trauma. And I'm like, you need to see this person. This person is a trauma therapist. And here's her number. You know what I mean? It's, we've got to be even careful as healers, or whatever we say, coaches and stuff. There is a limit, man. We are not therapists.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. Well, I'm not I don't do any of that anymore, but and I was a health coach for a while, and I'm still certified. I don't do it anymore, just because, to be frank with you, a lot of people that came to me didn't want to stay the route. Like, they wanted to do it for like a week, and then it wasn't like a lifestyle change. So it was a waste of my time. And you know, when I'm devoted, I'm devoted to you, and you just can't make people do things they're not ready for. Right. But at the end of the day, when I was health coaching these people, they would all cry on our calls, and I'm like, what did I say? And it was because we were uncovering levels and layers and layers of what the trauma, and it was always trauma. And I've gone through a lot of trauma. So I know the questions to ask to kind of figure out, you know, what's going on. And it was always trauma. And it's like, okay, well, you need to, you know, work on that. Like, you don't have to go your whole life dealing with trauma that happened to you when you're 6 years old. Like, you can be free. Well, I've been there. A lot of us have been there. You don't have to live like that. You don't have to let that hold you down. You don't have to use that as limiting beliefs. You don't have to, you know, let that take over your life.
So I say, you know, a life and business alchemist, and it's because I help people transform their lives and businesses. But man, as soon as you hit that trauma button, I'm out. I'm like, I'm not out. I'm here to support you whilst you're getting help with a therapist.
Right.
Because I am a life coach when it comes to your energy, your mindset.
And I mean, as somebody has been there through all those traumas, or for a lot of traumas in my life, I know that until you unpack those things, you're never going to thrive. Ever. Exactly. Your relationships are always going to suffer. Your, you know, either relationships with your family is going to suffer, or your job's going to suffer. You're not allowing yourself to be at that 100%, you know, capacity, because.
Well, you're going
to
sabotage.
Yeah. You're going to self-sabotage everything.
You're going to absolutely sabotage everything. And it's crazy. One book for any listeners, go and read The Big Leap from Gay Hendricks, life-changing book. And everyone has this kind of happiness set point, right? I call it like a happiness meter. And if we go beyond that, and it's set from layers and layers, like years and years and years in our childhood and chakras building, like if you want to go east and west and like bring it together, it's who we are and our upbringing. Now, if we go above and beyond whatever that set point is, so if we become super wealthy and we have a great marriage and we've got two beautiful children and a really successful business, and we're up like way up here, I'm doing hand gestures. Just imagine that you've gone way above and beyond your happiness set point, you are going to F something up so that you can, because it's uncomfortable up there. It sounds all great, but you don't know how to live there, because that your nervous system, your emotions, your heart, you don't know what to do with that. Your brain doesn't know how to cope.
And you don't think you deserve it.
Exactly. Or you go and gamble all your money away, or you do something, right? And this is why lotto winners, 70% of them lose not just what they won, but they lose everything else. They sabotage. It's so great. The brain and mind energy,
it's fascinating.
All of this stuff.
It's literally fascinating.
Fascinating.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all of your amazing insights. Oh, I just, you have the best energy. But let me know where we can find you.
So yeah, I obviously, I love fitness and fashion, and that's been my life, for literally 18 years and obviously business ownership. And so I incorporate like all of the stuff over my years, all the healing and fitness and everything like that. And I've now backed an athleisure wear brand who is not just a brand, it's actually creating a legacy. And what I mean by that is it's actually changing people's lives. It's changing families' lives. So we can go and we can shop. I love Free People, love Lululemon. I love all those brands, right? I have a closet filled with them. I do. I love them. They're great. I will still continue to shop at Free People, for instance. But they don't give me anything else in return. They don't reward me. They don't, they don't give me the opportunity to be financially free, time freedom, you know, location. They don't offer me anything else other than that really pretty thing that sits in my closet. Mm-hmm. And that's fine, but I wanted something more. And, you know, the business that I said no to this business 17 times because a portion of it is, and in my mindset, it was network marketing. Well, we've actually changed the game here, and you can do network marketing, but you can also be an affiliate or an influencer, right? So you look at the way that the world is, especially after 2020, e-commerce is where it's at. Like the most rapid growth in history when it comes to athleisure wear, right? Because what happened in 2020, it changed our style. Instead of restrictive, you know, tight jeans and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, I had to change my mindset. Even I still have to change my mindset because I got burned out doing network marketing in the past, and I thought it was just network marketing. And I listened and I saw all the beautiful ways that I can help people in so many ways. I now deal with boutiques. I help boutiques have passive income, which is our affiliate marketing program for boutiques. They don't have to do any of the inventory. None of that. And that's it. That they don't do network marketing. They don't build teams. They don't do anything. I have influencers. I have people who are everyday people who someone asks them, hey, where'd you get your awesome shirt dress? Oh, well, I actually got it from this company. Here's the link. So many levels and so much fun. And at the end of the day, like I love fashion so much that now I can just sell clothes like that. I mean, that's a part of what I love to do is to dress and style people. And when someone sends me a photo of them and they love their outfit, I literally light up. Mm-hmm. And that's as far as you can go as well with it. So there's just so much, and there's something for everybody. I'm so flipping excited. And yeah, just creating health, wealth, and happiness. So good.
I'm actually wearing the duster from Savvy right now. And I wear this thing, no kidding, 3 times a week to the fact that I'm buying 2 other colors. So I'm not just wearing the same one every single day.
Right. So, I rewash myself all the time.
I know.
I wear it every day.
Seriously. So where can people find information about when you're doing pop-ups?
Yeah. So my Instagram is my main social media avenue that I put all my stuff on. My handle is at GEM, like the stone, _ Munro, MUNRO. So you can go and follow me on Instagram. My link to my athleisure wear is on there. You can go and purchase it from there. You can ask me. If you don't want to just be a customer and you want to be an influencer or an affiliate, like how many people are these days, right?
I love it. I think it's awesome. I can wear this every single day. I'm here for it. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. We learned so much. I'm so glad to talk to you. I hate that you had to go through those experiences, but I'm glad you've grown and learned from them. And I'm glad that you're teaching women all your tips and tricks. And it's very important what you're doing.
Thank you so much, honey. I love you. Always have, always will. Thank you.